Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. I'm Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is taking a well-earned break with his family. Today we look at affordable housing and coalitions for building safe and healthy communities in the San Francisco Bay Area. We will address how reactionary forces, including the Tea Party and NIMBY groups, seek to block equitable housing and livable communities. Our guests include Wendy Callens with the Coalition for Livable Marin, Samuel Tepperman Galfont, a senior staff attorney with Public Advocates, which supports equitable development and affordable housing, and Chris McManus, community housing advocate and Project Censored researcher in Fairfax, California. We hope you stay tuned. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. We're going to address affordable housing and coalitions for building safe and healthy communities in the San Francisco Bay Area, which has implications for the nation. We have three guests today. Wendy Callens is a member of the Coalition for Livable Marin and has been promoting livable communities for 30 years. She's a founder and program director for National Model Safe Routes to Schools program in Marin County, which has successfully reduced traffic and increased green choices for children and their parents using a collaborative problem-solving process. She has also provided training and consultation to over 40 communities nationwide and been a featured speaker at national and international conferences. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here. Also joining us today is Sam Tepperman Galfont. He's a senior staff attorney at Public Associates, a civil rights law firm, an advocacy organization based in San Francisco. He fights in partnership with grassroots organizations throughout California for affordable housing and equitable transit investments and to protect low-income communities against development. Since 2010, Sam has worked with the Six Winds Network, a regional social justice coalition of more than 30 organizations fighting for just and sustainable development in the Bay Area. Sam, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Also joining us today is Chris McManus. He's a contributor to Project Censored. Some of his articles are on the Daily Censored, including the politics of heroin in Southeast Asia, Haitian voodoo economics, and the subprime mortgage crisis in the San Francisco Bay Area Hispanics. He also contributed to the Censored 2010 book with the seventh most censored story, Obama's military appointments have been a corrupt past. Chris is a founding member of the Marin County Bicycle Coalition. He has a sociology degree from Sonoma State. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, it's great to have you. Wendy, let's just start with you. You're part of the Coalition of Livable Marin.
Livable Marin.
Tell us what you see as the primary issues.
Well, you know, the Tea Party's penchant for supremacy of property rights, individual liberty, and climate change denial would seem like a poor fit for liberal areas like the San Francisco Bay Area. Yet they've made major inroads by honing in on the one issue that riles people in the Bay Area, and that is opposition to development, and specifically opposition to housing development. So when AB 32 and AB 325 passed and was designed to link housing and transportation, this was something that someone like me, who's been working on these issues for 30 years, was finally cheering. And this came as a result of a grassroots effort by many, many organizations. And yet the meme that's out there is that these two legislations, which are designed to reduce greenhouse gases, were actually an evil plot by development interests and bankers, when in fact it was grassroots people like me who put it together. So when Bay Area regional agencies decided to stop supporting automobile-centric sprawl and promote infill transit-oriented development, you'd think the people would stand up and cheer, but instead they came out in droves to oppose these new directives. And this was all organized and ginned up by Tea Party affiliates. They came from the East Bay, they came from the North Bay. People in Marin County swear up and down they're not part of the Tea Party, but I think we want to show today that the Tea Party had a hand in just about everything that's going on, from the websites, from the speakers that are brought in, and that's essentially what we want to present today.
So would you tell us about Agenda 21 as well, and then we'll move into the legal ideas.
Okay, so Agenda 21 is a United Nations document that came out of Rio that is a fairly thorough document, but fairly innocuous in that it's all voluntary. The primary purpose of the document is to talk about what needs to happen in developing nations to protect environmentally sensitive areas and also to promote the needs of the poor in those areas. Somewhere embedded in there's a few lines in there that talks about housing and transit and how building housing and transit together are important. And that's one of the things that we support, because people who live near transit tend to use transit more than people who don't live near transit. And people who are low income tend to own less automobiles and drive less than people who are wealthier. And the upshot of it is that Agenda 21 became a rallying cry for people in the Tea Party who were saying that, in essence, they were convinced that this is a vast conspiracy to force people out of their single-family homes and out of their cars and make them ride bikes, take transit, and only be able to shop within 10 miles of their home. And this is almost a direct quote from Heather Gass, who's from the East Bay Tea Party. They see it as a plot to impose a one-world government and thus will oppose anything that was remotely related to sustainable planning, public transit, bike lanes, and transit-oriented development.
And these Tea Party folks are not alone in this. Other groups, which we call Not in My Backyard or NIMBYs, correct?
You know, they get very offended if you call them NIMBYs because they say they're very much in a favor of affordable housing. They just don't think it's appropriate in this particular neighborhood where they live. But, you know, anti-development has been around in Marin County for a long time, because once upon a time, the entire West Marin of Marin County was slated for wall-to-wall development. We would have been another East Bay. That was stopped through a number of different initiatives, from developing national parks, state parks, and also a massive rezoning in 72, which designated West Marin for agriculture, and the city center corridor was where development was supposed to go. And that would have been great because we protected 85% of our open space, but the remaining 15% was supposed to be for development in the city center corridor. And what happened is the conservationists didn't stop. They have been fighting every single housing proposal that has happened in Marin ever since. So that's why they've made common cause with the Tea Party people, because they have the same goal, which is to stop housing. But they don't have the same goal in that most of the people in Marin are very concerned about climate change, and they simply don't accept the reality that we cannot continue to build in the far hinterlands of the Bay Area.
You're listening to the voice of Wendy Callens, a member of the Coalition for a Livable Marin. Let's turn now to Sam Tepperman-Galfant. He's a senior staff attorney at Public Advocates. Tell us about the legal structures put in place to guide local and regional land use in California, and of course these have implications for the entire country. Sam?
Civil rights and environmental protection are really the two guiding principles for regional and local land use planning in California. Oversight of local planning and regional planning dates back to the civil rights era, when cities throughout California were abusing their power to exclude low-income people and people of color from living in their towns. This created huge statewide and regional problems that extended beyond the boundaries of each individual town. It created and contributed to the severe housing shortage throughout the state, and also created and exacerbated racial and economic segregation. The state legislature stepped in and enacted something called the Housing Element Law, which has a very simple proposition behind it, which is that every city in the state should do its fair share to help meet the needs of people of all income levels. Practically speaking, what that means is that every 8 years, each city in the state is given a number of new homes that they need to plan for, divided up by income level. And then they need to adopt local plans that meet their local character and their local needs, but that creates the space and creates local programs to make sure that the affordable housing need can be accommodated in their towns.
So all these cities have just stepped forward and really met the goals. Is that, that's really not correct. I'm being facetious.
Well, I think this is exactly why we need and we have a robust system in California of making sure that there are basic constraints and basic goals that every city needs to meet in their local planning, because we saw that without those external expectations, each city and each community was acting in their narrow self-perceived self-interest, and the whole state was losing.
Tell us about Senate Bill 375.
Senate Bill 375, or SB 375, was passed in 2008 as part of a whole suite of legislation to deal with climate change and meet greenhouse gas reduction targets. It, again, has a pretty basic principle behind it, which is that we need to better coordinate regional land use and transportation planning so that people can live closer to jobs and transportation, so that we invest in public transit instead of highway expansion to fuel sprawl development. And as a result, people will drive less, greenhouse gases will be reduced, traffic will be reduced, and we will achieve our environmental objectives.
Now, in the Bay Area, who enforces these laws? How does that work?
There are two regional agencies in the Bay Area that collaborated on the Bay Area's plan under SB 375. The Association of Bay Area Governments, which has a focus on land use and housing planning, and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, with programs close to $300 billion in federal and state and local transportation dollars over a 30-year period. And they came together to come up with what they called Plan Bay Area, which was the regional long-term land use and transportation plan adopted last year.
So the goal, it seems to be, is to really offer affordable housing for everyone in any given area, including the most expensive areas like Marin, and to have transportation that people who don't have cars have an option of not having a car. Does that sound correct?
And I would add to that that what we're talking about is creating walkable, bikeable communities. The idea is to diversify our transportation system. We have developed since the 50s, since the Federal Highway Act, which was another government program that essentially created the development patterns that we have today and built into our farmlands and built into our open space and forced everyone into have only one choice, which is to drive an automobile. What we want is to diversify our transportation system. If you want to reduce traffic Bay Area-wide, then you need to give people the option of not having to drive everywhere they go.
You know, the New York Times had a story about housing costs in California being one of the highest in the nation, and that essentially you had to make $27 an hour to be able to, you know, have a two-bedroom apartment throughout the state, and certainly in the Bay Area and other areas. And so there's a lot of people that really can't afford, and they're spending half their income or more just to have a place to stay. And you're talking here about making that easier for everyone, and that cities are obligated to do that. Is that correct?
And 70% of the people polled, you know, in the Bay Area said they agree that housing is a problem. Only 30% that said that they would have housing in their own neighborhood. That's the reason you have these state mandates.
So people are willing to have low-income housing as long as it's not next to them.
That's right.
Is that what you've run into, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I also would point out that people all over the place are perfectly happy to have low-wage jobs in their communities. People bagging groceries, people staffing offices, cleaning offices. And so when we're talking about affordable housing in all communities, I think it's critical to realize that we're not talking about bringing in outsiders. We're talking about creating a space for people who are already members of those communities to live and send their kids to school there, not just work there and then commute long distances to someplace they can afford to live.
So you're saying that baristas and shopping bag packers need to have a place to live, too, and shouldn't have to commute miles to get there.
Absolutely. And I think that what one of the things about SB 375 is that it recognizes that there are severe environmental consequences to having segregated and inadequate housing in the state, not just social consequences, but we are killing our planet because we can't get it together to build adequate housing near jobs and transportation.
You know, it's a puzzle to me. Why would anyone oppose this? Can you enlighten me on that, Wendy?
Well, you got to start with Agenda 21, you know, and the Tea Party faction of it. So we'll talk about their side of it. Why are they opposed to it? They're libertarians. They don't believe in government. They don't want government mandates. They talk a lot about local control, and so do the people on the conservation side of the aisle. They talk a lot about local control and not wanting government mandates. Now, on the conservationist side, they have no problem with government mandates like CEQA, which controls development and actually is very important for environmental protection, but also drives up the cost of housing. But they're very upset about these mandates that they have to have so much housing. You have to look at their talking points, because what they tell people, and I've gone to their, what I like to call their revival sessions, because they're kind of, they gin people up. They tell people, they start out with, they're evil developers and evil bankers who colluded with these unelected bureaucrats to try to force something on you. What they are forcing on you are what they call stack and pack, which is another name for apartment buildings, in your neighborhood. And there's not going to just be one of them, it's going to be everywhere. They're going to be building it next to your house. And some of the people there do say things like, we don't want those kind of people living there. Other people, you know, are not racist, but at the same time, it's just, it's change, and they don't want change. And Marin County, you're supposed to have no growth in Marin County. Now, mind you, we have built shopping centers, we've built employment centers, and nobody has protested any of those. As a matter of fact, a group in Novato just said, we don't want any housing here, but offices are okay. When, point in fact, those offices actually might generate more traffic, and that gets to the big point, is they say there's just too much traffic, which is ironic because to them, they don't know where traffic is coming from. A lot of the traffic is coming from the fact that people can't live here, so they drive here to work. So it's not a linear thing. It's a systemic problem, and you have to look at it systemically. But that becomes nuanced, and it's hard to put that on a talking point or on a bumper sticker.
Sam, talk a little bit about how this translates, this issue translates to the rest of the San Francisco Bay Area and national.
Yeah, I think that the legal frameworks that are set up, SB 375 and the housing element law, apply to every region in California. And then I think that it also is important to recognize that California is the leading edge, but we're really seeing a national trend following, especially in the idea of regional planning and better coordinating land use and transportation. There's a federal government grant program that is funding regional planning efforts in dozens of regions throughout the country with the goal that we need to think about the region as the right unit of economics, of housing, of employment, and of transportation, and that the future really lies in making sure that regions work, not just that every small town thinks that it's working on its own.
So this has a national implication.
Absolutely. As I'll talk about in a few minutes, we've done some really groundbreaking social justice regional organizing through the SB 375 process to seize this opportunity to fight for low-income communities and communities of color. And that's a story that we've been taking on the road nationally to train and support other social justice groups in other regions that are trying to do the same thing.
We're going to take a short musical break, and when we get back, we're going to hear from Chris McManus, his story about Fairfax, California, and then we'll get into Sam's regional efforts in the Six Win program. This is the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips, and today we're addressing affordable housing and coalitions for building safe and healthy communities in the San Francisco Bay Area and the world, I think. That's part of what we have. Our group here today is Wendy Callens, the Coalition for Livable Marin, Sam Tepperman-Gelfont, Senior Staff Attorney with Public Advocates in San Francisco, and Chris McManus. He's a community housing advocate and researcher for Project Censored in Fairfax, California. Chris, let's turn to you. You have a story about Fairfax, which I think is, and you have just published that story on the Project Censored site, which I think was an important thing to do. Tell us what happened there.
Well, I got involved with the fight for affordable housing a couple of years ago when I was attending the Marin County Civic Center meetings concerning Plan Bay Area. I was very interested in the housing element of the unincorporated areas in Marin County. And what I found there was a whole contingent of people who were devoted to disrupting the proceedings, such as Heather Gass was attending. She was from the East Bay Tea Party. There were Tea Party members attending from Sonoma County as well, and from places all over the Bay Area. They seemed to be determined to delay the planning meeting and destroy the planning process. So I thought, gee, this is an interesting new strategy by the Tea Party to disrupt the proceedings, delay the process, and destroy the planning. Now, the level of discourse was decidedly uncivil and disrespectful, which is actually a departure from the norm of, you know, affluent Marin County. Name-calling and shouting people down became commonplace, which surprised me. People were coming from all over the Bay Area affiliated with these Tea Party groups, and they were using Tea Party talking points and tactics to stop low-income housing developments. So I realized there was a whole new tactics and strategies employed by these anti-affordable housing groups that I had never seen before. And what happened up at the Marin County Civic Center was there was another development. There was a political debate that included a Cato Institute public policy analyst named Randall O'Toole. Mr. O'Toole participated in what was known as the Great Debate in the Board of Supervisor chambers at the Marin Economic Forum. Mr. O'Toole is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. He was debating the 4th District Marin County Supervisor, Steve Kinsey, Mark Luce from ABAG, the Association of Bay Area Governments, and Thomas Rubin. What was significant in this debate, I felt, was that the only person participating in the Plan Bay Area Forum that was not from the Bay Area was Randall O'Toole, who was on the Cato Institute payroll backed by David and Charles Koch. And you can see this debate on YouTube on Tea Party TV. Just type in Marin, the Great Debate. Now, Mr. O'Toole does not believe in planning at all, and he doesn't believe in public transportation. He believes in sprawl and privatization. He's from out of state. He's from Camp Sherman, Oregon. And at this debate, he wore a bolo tie and a cowboy shirt. So he was kind of a showman of sort, and he was selling this neo-libertarian free market vision of the future. He railed against smart growth strategies such as transit-oriented development, light rail, such as the smart train here in the San Francisco North Bay area, and he was against mixed-use infill affordable housing development. But what alarmed me was the participation of this Koch brothers-funded political operative that alerted me to the fact that the affordable housing fight in Marin had bigger national implications. I knew that the Koch brothers-funded Americans for Prosperity and backed and supported many Tea Party activists.
So how did these Tea Party tactics and strategies affect the housing element in your own hometown in Fairfax?
Well, Peter, I live across the street from Christ Lutheran Church in Fairfax, California. About 20 years ago, the Lutheran pastor and the elders of the church decided to develop 2 of the 20 acres the church owns in order to provide affordable housing for seniors. The 40 units of affordable housing was to be called Peace Village. The church project was part of the Fairfax housing element in the general plan. The general plan and the housing element for Fairfax was opposed by two former city councilmen, Niccolo Caladero and Frank Egger. Caladero and Egger circulated a petition that was a referendum designed to rescind the ordinance that implemented the general plan and its housing element. And I was approached during this petition drive. I was approached outside the Good Earth Natural Food Store by these petitioners who implored me to save Fairfax. And, of course, I did not sign it, but many did. And many who did sign it later claimed that they did not understand what they were signing and publicly regretted it later. And this is according to one Fairfax City Councilman. Many said that they were persuaded by the scare tactics of creeping urbanization in rural West Marin.
So they're standing out in front of the natural food store.
Yeah.
They're shouting or saying, save Fairfax. And using scare, what were some of the specifics of the scare tactics they were talking about?
Well, it seems that one of the scare tactics and strategies employed in my hometown was the threat of the massive urbanization in the community of stoplights, parking meters, no parking, traffic. And what happened on the day of the town council meeting that was to rescind the implementation of the general plan, a flyer was deposited in almost every mailbox in town. And that flyer said in big block letters, it said, "Last chance to save our neighborhood. This is the town council meeting. Demand Ordinance 778 be repealed or put on November ballot."
Okay, let's move to Sam. And tell us, Sam, what are some of the disruptive tactics you've seen, anti-planning activists?
We did see a large turnout of angry folks in the Plan Bay Area regional planning process that wrapped up last year, particularly late in the planning process. They had been primarily absent from the planning process and came in at the end to try to just sort of talk about unrelated issues in public meetings, and it did make it a bit hard to get our message through. But this was counterbalanced and really didn't make much of a difference, largely because there had been a four-year-long authentic grassroots community engagement process spearheaded by a social justice coalition called the Six Winds Network. The Six Winds Network came together in 2010 at the very beginning of the regional planning process, and more than 30 organizations came together to fight for a regional land use and transportation plan that focused first on the needs of the Bay Area's most vulnerable residents and fighting for very basic human rights such as affordable housing, access to transportation, protections against gentrification and displacement, economic opportunity. And members of the Six Winds Network had come to every public meeting on Plan Bay Area for years, had met with every elected official sitting on the regional agency boards, had developed relationships with staff, and had done this all through deep engagement directly from low-income people and people of color who have been historically excluded from planning processes like this. And so when the anti-planning contingent came in to attack the plan at the end, we found that we were really able to cut through that noise because we had laid such a strong and deep groundwork in the planning process to focus on civil rights, social justice issues. And at the end of the day, when the plan was adopted last summer, there were a couple of hundred anti-planning folks who turned out. There was an equal number of social justice advocates who turned out. And when public comment was done and the elected officials discussed the substance of the plan, the only issues they talked about were social justice, civil rights issues. And all of the anti-planning stuff turned out to just be noise that really just didn't make much of a difference.
So when you can build a coalition of activists around social justice in support of the laws that are in place, you can move forward.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we need to out-organize, out-politic, out turnout, the folks who really are pushing a reactionary agenda that does not speak to the needs or desires of Bay Area or California residents. And we need to get the folks who have been excluded from decision making right there front and center to speak for themselves.
That's the voice of Sam Tepperman-Gelfont, a senior staff attorney at Public Advocates, one of the groups that is pushing the Six Winds coalition in the San Francisco Bay Area. And, of course, that could be done anywhere in the country, I would expect. Let's go back to Windy. And you had some other ideas about what the tactics are that you're up against.
Yeah, I think there's some basic tactics. Endlessly repeating talking points. You know, if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes real. One of the things that they will do is they will demonize basically anybody in the opposition. So, and it just so happens that if you are an advocate, such as Sam and myself, or if you work for that kind of an organization, if you are a government worker, if you're an academic, if you're an expert in planning, if you're an expert in transportation, and basically if you're somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, you are demonized in public. And then they come up with their own quote-unquote facts, and they repeat them over and over again. They disrupt town hall and civic center meetings with intimidation. They'll shout down the opposition. They have abused the referendum process. And then if you call them on any of this, they will deny every bit of it. Recently, Bob Silvestri, who is kind of the darling in Marin County, and he wrote a book that I have sitting here called Best Laid Plans, which Randall O'Toole also wrote a book called Best Laid Plans, an amazing coincidence. And he talks
about... Remind us who he was.
Randall O'Toole is the Cato Institute-funded guy who goes around the country trying to tear down public train proposals. And he's been actually successful in a number of places and was successful in Marin and Sonoma until we finally got our smart train passed. So, you know, Bob will talk about there are better solutions. You know, his thing is you make a lot of noise, you disrupt the process, then you create doubt, and then you offer solutions. And we're still waiting for the third part of that one, of offering solutions. And in his book, there's a couple places where he gets into solutions, and it's kind of maddening because he says things like infill, work, live situations, senior housing. I'm going, wait a minute, this is exactly what we're proposing. And you're opposing it, and yet you're saying that these are the solutions. So it's a little crazy-making, because essentially it sounds like this is a good guy who believes in climate change and is promoting sustainability, except he thinks that it's okay to keep building farther and farther and farther out. People can live anywhere they want to, and they can travel any way they want to. They actually take the point of view that if they want to live in the suburbs and they want to drive and they already live in the suburbs and they're already driving, but other people want to live differently and they don't want to let other people have other options. They want everybody to have to live in the suburbs and drive everywhere they go.
Now, Chris, let's go back to you. Chris McManus, an advocate for housing in Fairfax and a researcher with Project Censored, with a new post on our website on this very issue. You were saying how this Christ Lutheran Church in Fairfax wanted to build some senior citizen housing for some of their seniors, and that this was disrupted and attacked. But that what were some of the things that were said that blocked this?
Well, essentially, they attacked the whole general plan with its housing element. The church project for senior housing was part of the general plan and part of the housing element. And once they attacked the general plan, then, of course, the senior housing project was delayed, and that they used the scare tactics of massive urbanization within Fairfax as part of their tactics and strategy. One strategy is that they said that there was an approved project for 30 to 50 condos approved for the middle of town. Well, that was not true. 30 to 50 condos were neither approved, nor had there been an application for such a project, nor was there an entitlement to build one. That's just one example. There are many examples. They preyed on the fears of increased crime, depressed property values. They preyed on the fear of issues of traffic and parking. And these are the arguments we've seen time and time again.
I think you actually told me that if there were seniors moving into this complex, that they were worried their grandchildren would come and disrupt or cause crime or something.
Well, that was a point that by Tony Schroyer, who ran for Novato supervisor against Judy Arnold. She actually said that there would be increased crime from the senior housing projects due to their grandchildren coming in and committing crimes. Yes.
And I want to do just a little clarification, because that one project that he was talking about, the 30 to 50 condos, what they were taking is a property owner's wish and desire to build a development and act as though this was a fait accompli. So this is an instance where they take something that is true, but they distort it and turn it into something to scare people and lead them to believe that this is their last chance to stop it, when in fact the zoning on that property does not allow what he wants to do. And neither the current zoning or the future zoning that was proposed in the housing element. But if you don't understand planning, you wouldn't understand that. And so taking advantage of people's ignorance is a good tactic.
And this is often very emotional, scare-based tactics that are trying to undermine, equitable housing, safe communities, public transit, bicycles, kids able to safely ride their bike to school, that sort of thing. And it's really, really amazing. The literature in sociology talks about community power in the context of what is known as the growth machine. That is, networks of developers, the newspaper, business people that want to see growth. But they want to see a certain kind of growth. They want to maximize, particularly landowners, want to maximize a return on the properties they have and to see values increase as well. So in any given city, there's a network of people who do want to support development because they've got vested interests in that. But then there's a tension with their vested interests. They don't want to see low-income people or accommodate homeless or people that don't meet the income levels that they would like to see. So the richer the community, the more likely they're going to be supporting that kind of a tactic.
And they're also, density is a big issue for people. And of course, in order to achieve affordable housing, you have to have a higher density. And instead of looking at the density, they really should be looking at size. Because we have one development in Marin County, which is called the Wind Cup, which is these huge four-story buildings all stacked near each other, which is the poster child for their anti-housing campaign. The thing that they don't tell people is these are 2,000 square foot apartments. These are huge luxury apartments. This is not what we're talking about. And when we say people, not all development is equal. Some of it is good and some of it is not good. But we can't have that conversation if you just say no to everything.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to take a short musical break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about the six wins and what are the positive things that people can do in these regards. We'll be right back. is the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips, and today we're discussing affordable housing and coalitions for building safe and healthy communities in the San Francisco Bay Area. With us is Wendy Callens from the Coalition for Livable Marin, Sam Tepperman-Gelfand, a senior staff attorney at Public Advocates, and Chris McManus, a Fairfax community housing advocate. Sam, let's turn to you and talk about what the six wins mean. What are the six wins exactly? And how does that lead to protecting people from being displaced?
The six wins is built on the belief that planning and investments need to benefit first the most vulnerable among us and bring into the decision-making process the low-income communities of color that have been excluded. We called it the six wins because we wanted to focus on the positive outcomes that we were looking for. More affordable housing everywhere it's needed. Protections against displacement for folks living in the urban core. More equitable economic opportunity, healthier neighborhoods, better local public transit, and above all, building community power of the most affected, most vulnerable communities to influence the decision-making process. I'm glad that you mentioned displacement because we've talked a lot this hour about opposition to affordable housing and development in suburban exclusive communities, and we definitely need more affordable housing in those places. But the flip side of that coin is that SB 375 to focus on transit-oriented development and the general national trend in both public planning and in private markets to see transit-connected urban centers as desirable also creates enormous pressure on communities that have basically been abandoned and left behind in those urban core neighborhoods for a couple of generations. And they're now facing skyrocketing rents, huge real estate developer interest pushing projects into their communities. And we see this throughout the Bay Area as sort of the international poster child of this. But it's the same thing as happening in pockets of Detroit, where there's been efforts for reinvestment, and as soon as the neighborhood becomes a little bit safer, has a few more amenities, people can no longer afford to live there. And so I think that part of what has been exciting about the six wins and an important voice to bring into planning is that low-income communities that I work with throughout the Bay Area are not anti-development, but they are insisting that development in their communities be built to meet their needs, come with community benefits, come with safeguards so that they are not priced out of their neighborhood as soon as a grocery store moves in. And they are organizing from the ground up throughout the Bay Area and throughout the state and throughout the nation to push back against a just pro-development, any development near transit is good framework, and saying we need the right kind of community-serving development near transit so that people can continue to live in their communities while their community infrastructure and amenities improve.
So we want public transit and then housing that's close to public transit with jobs in the neighborhood and shopping within the neighborhood. It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, it's certainly something that is doable in communities, and you lay out that launching, you know, first ever community built equity driven alternative regional plan is what really important to this, and you've actually been engaging with that. You also try to show that equity is better for everyone. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was one of the most exciting lessons, I think, from the Six Wins and from the Bay Area Regional Plan, which is that the Six Wins and our allies created a ground-up, community-driven alternative long-term land use and regional transportation plan, which sounds so wonky and like no one could understand or engage in it. But our alternative was driven by more affordable housing everywhere it's needed, protections against displacement, and investment in the public transit network that we have so that people can really use it. We fought really hard and had this community-developed alternative studied by the regional agencies developing the regional plan. And when the results of that study came out, our community alternative, the equity, environment, and jobs alternative, outperformed every other alternative on the table, really proving that when you start with meeting the needs of low-income communities and communities of color, you achieve better environmental outcomes and better outcomes for everyone.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. I really appreciate that. Sam, tell us first off, where would people go to get more information on Six Wins?
People can definitely contact me and my organization, Public Advocates. We also have some great grassroots organizing core members, including Genesis, which is a faith-based organization, San Francisco Organizing Project, Peninsula Interfaith Action, which is another organizing group, ACE, which is a statewide neighborhood and economic justice organizing group. And, you know, I think there are chapters all over the place, from Marin to Los Angeles and really a national network, where there are people, you know, whether it's a small group of people that's trying to seed this activism or really robust organizations that are electing city council members, there are great ways to get involved.
Chris and Wendy, let's go back to you and talk about the North Bay. What are some of the coalition groups that you're engaged with? Safe Bicycle Lanes, you've been involved in that, Wendy?
Well, Safe Routes to Schools is what I do in my day job. But Coalition for Livable Marin is bringing together people, a lot of the housing activists, a lot of the transportation activists, the faith communities. We're doing the same kind of organizing. I think one of the problems we're having that Sam didn't have to encounter is Sam's organization was in place when the Tea Party showed up. We were not. They came in first. And so what we're having to deal with now is they have, despite the fact that they're saying it's all about process, their process of disrupt, disturb, get people scared, get people angry, actually precludes the opportunity to do the kind of local organizing that Sam was able to do. There, you know, I don't approve of absolutely everything that is being proposed in Marin County. And in some cases, I may think, all right, they're on the right track, but we have to get the nuances here. And you can't have that discussion when you've shut down the whole process. So, for instance, you know, and looking at a place like Larkspur Landing. Larkspur Landing is where the SMART train is coming in. It's where the ferry comes in. And it's also where we have the confluence of the north-south bikeway. So it's a major transit hub for non-automobile, but it's also a major transportation hub for automobiles as well. There's a shopping center there that calls itself mixed use, but point in fact, if you live in the apartment, you can't walk down to the shopping center. If you work in the offices, you can't walk over to the shopping center or the apartments because it's all auto-centric. We had an opportunity to replan in this area, increase some of the housing near the stores, and create a whole circulation system in there to make it more walkable and bikeable. Their attitude was shut the whole thing down, no to the plan, and now there's no more planning going on, and we can't have the discussion.
Chris, in Fairfax, who's been your allies, and what progress has been made there?
Well, Wendy and I belong to an organization that we started called Fairfax for Affordable Housing, and those who believe in a fair and equitable housing policy need to counter the attacks from the far right with their own campaigns. In Marin, there are such groups as the Coalition for a Livable Marin, there is Sustainable Marin, and the Marin Environmental Housing Collaborative. Those are such groups.
There's also an interfaith organization and a church-based. Matter of fact, the church-based group is going to have a housing Sabbath in which they have a whole toolkit for their pastors and rabbis and such to speak before the congregation about housing.
Sam, I think what I heard you say is because Six Wins was in place, there can be an enduring community membership in the decision-making process. There's constructive input in the process and drafting of plans that needs to be community-based. There's an educational process of making sure elected officials are aware of what the core issues are. And there's kind of a creating communications within neighborhoods in terms of what's important. Where are we going from here?
Well, I think that We need more education. And, you know, you asked earlier, why are people who should be supporting these very logical environmental solutions actually opposing them? And I think it's misinformation. You know, you say affordable housing, and most people who have not thought about it think about giant brick towers in Cabrini Greens in Chicago. And that is not what we're talking about with affordable housing opportunities, and has not been for decades. But I think, you know, we've worked with organizations like East Bay Housing Organizations that leads tours of existing affordable housing so that people can see for themselves what great places those are for people to live. And I think moving forward, building on the momentum that we have built through the six wins in the first round of the regional planning process, we need to make our vision more of a reality. So we came up with a great community plan that outperformed the government plans on environment and social justice, and we made some incremental progress towards getting elements of those plan that our plan adopted, but there's much farther to go. We need to make sure that we are standing up together to support local affordable housing advocacy everywhere. We need to actually make sure that we are shifting money from highways into bus service. And I think displacement, especially in the Bay Area, is just a problem that many elected officials just would like to wish away. But we are not going to stop this trend of gentrification, displacement, and exclusion of people from their own communities unless we radically reshape the land use process, expect more from private landowners and developers, and give low-income communities a real voice in decision-making. And we are continuing to fight for that at both the regional and local level.
Okay. Wendy, Chris, what do you see in the future? What engagements are you going to be doing in, and how will it help equitable housing?
Well, we are going to continue working to build our coalition and educate the population about the difference between the planning process and a development proposal, that when somebody says X number of housing units are being proposed, what they really mean that X number of housing units has actually been planned. Or actually, in some cases, it hasn't even been planned yet. We're just in a discussion to see how many units can actually go somewhere. I think the most important thing that we're looking for is to try to engage in countywide discussions about housing and land use, and bringing together a lot of various interest groups, essentially do what Sam has done on the regional level within our own county, and have those real discussions and reasoned discussions about how we want to grow as Marin. I do have a lot of faith in the people of Marin. They're intelligent and environmentally sound people, and I think we can turn this thing around.
I'd also like to add, we are posting, and for more information, you can go to www.projectcensored.org. Today's article is The Green Tea Party and the Fight for Affordable Housing in America's Most Expensive Community.
Now, what do you mean by the Green Tea Party?
Well, the Green Tea Party is an actual Green Tea Party in Atlanta, and that is a coalition between
Sierra Club, anti-development factions, and Tea Party.
Two ends of the political spectrum are kind of coming together around opposition to growth and development.
Basically, yes.
And within that element, of course, is the identification of low-income people, which can certainly carry some racial overtones, and, you know, and supporting those kinds of communities. Is that correct, essentially?
Supporting which kind of community?
Supporting or challenging low-income communities from people of color from achieving development or being part of the planning cycle.
Yeah, I think that's a factor in there. There have certainly been racist comments that have come out of the Marin Against Density people. I really want to say that I don't think that most of the people involved in this are racist and are coming at it from a racist point of view. They're coming at it from a we don't like development point of view. And I think it's really important, because when you start attributing these things to people and they're going to vehemently deny it, and you've ended the conversation, you have to understand that some of these people have genuine concerns. They're just not allowing a genuine conversation to take place.
Got it. Okay, I'm clear. So, Sam, let's end up the show with you today. We've got 1 minute left. And what are the national, perhaps even international implications from what you're doing here in the Bay Area and where other people concerned with these issues around the world can engage?
We need to set an example here in the Bay Area. We have a wealth of community organizations, of expertise, of organizing, and government agencies that are willing to listen. And I think that it is critical that we set the path and then go out and show other people how it's done. I think we are forming statewide networks throughout California to build on what we've done here. And nationally and internationally, urban transit-oriented development is the wave of the future. We need to show people how to do it so that it serves the needs of low-income communities.
Well, thank you very much, Sam Tepperman-Galfant, Senior Staff Attorney of the Public Advocates, Wendy Callens, member of the Livable Moran, and Chris McManus, Fairfax Advocate. You are tuned to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest, and Erica Bridgman at the controls. The Project Censored Show airs on 20 stations around the U.S. and now Puerto Rico. We welcome our new affiliate station, WNRT, in Manatee, Puerto Rico. Archives can be found online at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians. Cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces. For almighty dollar bills, we won. We got the love of the thought brothers and our sisters. The people together can overthrow the system. We got that love of the thought brothers and your sisters. The people together can overthrow the system. We got the love of the thought brothers and our sisters. The people together can overthrow the system. We got the love of the thought brothers and our sisters. The people organized can build the kind of future we want. Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by criminal minds. Political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys. And the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the ties for the master thief. Combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.